This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Series 7, Episode 14 of Out With Susie Ruffle. This is the penultimate episode of the series, so we've got just one more coming next week. Before we begin, I always need to do my classic thank yous. Lots of people got in touch last week after Reese's episode. It felt like it really resonated with many of you, so I'm delighted that so many of you enjoyed it, and thank you very, very much for listening. Today I've got a brilliant conversation with Laura Kay, who is an author and a journalist, and I'm currently reading her book Wild Things, which I highly recommend. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. It's one of those books where I can't wait to get into bed to read. I actually said to Alice this morning, we've got to go to bed early tonight because I really need to finish this book. It's one of those, you can't put it down, so I highly recommend it. And we had a really brilliant chat about what it's like to be queer in the publishing industry, what it's like sharing your stories, making sure that queer stories are front and center rather than a minor character in a straight person's story. Anyway, I think she's a brilliant writer and I really loved our conversation. So if you're not aware of Laura yet, I think that you'll love this chat and then buy all of her books because I think she's brilliant. I really, really liked her. Okay, as always, I have some listener emails. Hi, Susie. Thank you for Out. It's such a joy to drive to work hearing happy queer people reflect on their journey. I am bi/pan and finally feel comfortable being out. Now I'm in my 30s. I really appreciate that you always say that you see the damage that was done to bi folk when gay and lesbian people have said that they're bi to help them hide a little longer. I just wanted to say, while acknowledging the damage and the impacts of biphobia is vital, I don't hold it against anyone. Being queer can be scary and emotionally and physically dangerous. If saying you're bi keeps you safe, then do what you have to do. If in the future you feel safe enough to be out as who you are, work to undo that biphobia. We're all just trying to survive, and being queer makes that even more complicated. Sending love from Western Australia to you, your guests, and to all of the other listeners out there. And that's from Mel. Thanks so much for getting in touch, Mel. It's really important to me that I always reflect on that and that I talk about it because now I am very sort of happily out. But that's a very kind thing for you to get in touch and say. And I'm sure there were people listening that email has made them feel a little bit better, maybe. So I really appreciate you taking the time to get in touch. Okay, let's have another one. Hi, Susie. I've been meaning to email for a while. Your podcast means the world to me and has been a huge part of my life and story over the past few years. I'm 39 years old. Section 28 was in place for the exact years that I went to school and had an enormous impact on my life. I'm just realising that too. Huge. I grew up in a homophobic household with jokes about gay and trans people being very normalised. There was also those awful Tombstone AIDS adverts on the TV, which made my parents so scared of their children being gay. Age 14, I came out to my close friends as bisexual, but I never told anyone else or my parents. By 16, I'd realised I was actually gay, but I was absolutely petrified. My family, school, and frankly, the entire world at the time told me that being gay was not okay. Gay people couldn't get married or have children, and I had no positive representation of gay people in my life. I ended up in a relationship with a cis man who I knew from school, who my parents liked and offered me a stable future. Very, very comp-het. He knew I had previously been in relationships with girls and he said he didn't care. This was the best I could hope for and find some resemblance of happiness. We married when I was 24 and we have two wonderful children. When I was pregnant with my eldest, I had this overwhelming need to be open with the world, about my sexuality and increasingly about my gender. By the time my youngest was born, the urgency was becoming clearer. I still hadn't come out to my parents. Every time I saw them, I would prepare to say something and then panic the whole time I was there and never say a thing. My husband would tell me that I would lose my family if I told them, and I believed them. My mum would still say awful things to gay people. For example, she told her gay neighbours that she was so happy they got married, but that she would disown them if they were her sons. Oof. Around 6 years ago, I finally realised I was definitely gay. I needed to tell my husband and find a way to live my truth. I told him, and he said he didn't mind. I cried, but nothing changed. Then COVID happened. Suddenly, I couldn't hold it in any longer. I came out to my mum over Facebook messages. She cried and I cried. A far too long story for this email. My parents, knowing that I was gay, opened the floodgates and I was finally free to be myself. I came out as gay, as non-binary, and finally separated from my husband. Then I fell in love. For the first time in my life as an adult, I fell head over heels in love, and it has completely changed my life. I grieve my queer youth. I've lost so many friends, and I am building a life that is so true and showing my children that choosing you is the most important thing you can do with your life. I am so proud of who I am. Fast forward a few years, and I've just got married to my absolutely incredible wife. They have turned my life upside down in all the right ways. Our relationship fills me with the most amazing queer joy. Finally, someone loves me for exactly who I am and not the person that they want me to be. And finally, I love myself for those reasons. It's a long and difficult journey. My parents are still slowly coming to terms with things, and I'm not sure they'll ever get my pronouns right. But they are still in my life, and they even came to my wedding. Thank you for all you do. You've changed my life. And that's from Indy. That is a very, very kind thing to say. I think you changed your life, and the people that come on this podcast sharing their stories maybe helped along the way. But you did that. I can't take any of the credit for that. You did that. But thank you so much for reaching out, and I'm so happy. And congratulations to you and your wife. How wonderful. I hope that you had a gorgeous day. I'm sure that you did. Before we get on with today's chat, I just wanted to let you know, if you want to come along and see my stand-up tour, I know lots of you already have, and it's been so joyful to meet so many of you. Honestly, it means the world when people say that they listen to this podcast, or that they're a like-minded friend and they listen to mine and Tom's. It really does make me, it makes me really proud of this show and really thrilled that it means so much to so many people. But you might be thinking, Suze, where are you going? And listen, I'm trying to, okay, I found my website. It's embarrassing that it took me that long. I couldn't find the button. Okay, where are you going, Suze? Don't worry, guys, I'm about to tell you. Oh, first of all, I'm doing a show in Milton Keynes at the International Festival on the 23rd of July. I think it's going to be lovely. I think it's outdoors in like a Spiegel tent or something. I think it's going to be a really fun one. So that's on the 25th of July. If you live anywhere near Milton Keynes, have a look at that. Then the tour begins again in earnest in September. And where are you going, Suze? Don't worry, I'm going to tell you. Newcastle, Sheffield, Birmingham. Again, I'm going back to Birmingham. Maidstone, Cambridge. I'm doing a big show in London, bigger than any show I've ever done in London at the Bloomsbury Theatre. I really hope people are going to come, because I've already done lots of shows at the Soho Theatre, but apparently there's more people that are keen to come in London, so please buy a ticket for that. That's on the 4th of October, and that will be one of my biggest tour shows to date. Then I'm going to Bournemouth, Peterborough, Coventry, Chorley, Kendal. I'm going to the Lake District, and I had an email today from Rural Rob, who is coming along to the West Country show. I'm very much looking forward to meeting so many of my out friends there. Anyway, Southport, Buxton, Basingstoke, Folkestone. I said that in kind of a American southern states. Folkestone. Northampton, Aberdeen, Dundee, Newbury, Brighton again. And the tour will finish in Bury St Edmunds. I don't know what Bury St Edmunds is like. I hope it's a great place to have a final tour show of this tour. But if you're planning on coming, they will be the final dates of this tour. So try and come to one of those. Okay, let's get on with today's conversation with the brilliant Laura Kay. I hope that you enjoy this as much as I did. Oh, hello, listener. I'm really looking forward to today's chat with author and journalist Laura Kay. I am currently loving Laura's new book, Wild Things, and I was very keen to chat to her about her journey into publishing and about queer storytelling, putting people like us in the driver's seat, falling in love, having complicated relationships and friendships, rather than just being a someone in a straight person's story.
Laura has written for The Bookseller, Diva Magazine, The Guardian, Metro, The Stylist, and many others. Her books The Split, Tell Me Everything, and Wild Things all received widespread praise and acclaim. Indeed, last month, Wild Things were published in the US, and the New York Times Review read, "Wild Things is an excellent romantic comedy. It is not a sunny sky, but a sunbeam, energy focused into a patch of hopeful light." I am delighted that she's taken the time to chat with me today. Hello, Laura.
Hello.
How are you?
That's lovely. Oh my God, what a nice introduction. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks good. For asking. I am thoroughly enjoying Wild Things.
Thanks.
I still find it quite... Maybe people are going to be listening to this and they'll think, "Oh, Suze, that's because you're an idiot." But I still feel like I find it quite hard to find a book where I really relate to the protagonist, where someone like me isn't the sort of butt of a joke or just sort of someone in the sidelines. Was your... Oh, this is... I've got like really into it really quickly, but it's because I really want to know the answer. You started off as a journalist, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And so... And I know you went to Sheffield.
I did.
And so was it always the aim to get into writing a book? Did you want to be a novelist?
I did want to be a novelist. I did always think about stories. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to tell stories, but I never really considered that was a career that I could have. Mm-hmm. It kind of felt like a dream career that wasn't possible. And I went into journalism. I started working for like sort of online stuff mm-hmm. when I was living in Sheffield, and I started working in Manchester, and I got a job at The Guardian mm. after I wrote a piece for them about how hard it was to find a job.
It was a great way to get a job.
And then when I was there, I sort of fell into a role that, I mean, if you're reading Wild Things, will be familiar to you.
Oh, okay, sure.
I sort of fell into a role that...
Oh, are you L?
I'm not L. Okay. But that job, anyone who knew me at that time and then has read Wild Things will be like, I recognise that sort of slightly stagnant feeling of working somewhere where you're so close to the action but not quite there.
Yeah, sure.
And I sort of started writing in my spare time, and I had like a very small amount of a book, like literally 1,000 words, the opening to a book, which ended up being my first novel. And I, on a total whim, on the last day of the scheme that Penguin Run called Right Now, mm-hmm. sent it off to them, and everything happened after that. It was total luck. It was luck that I saw a tweet advertising it. It was luck that I had just finished 1,000 words that week. Like everything.
And that's what they just wanted 1,000 words.
They wanted 1,000 words, and that's what I had. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's serendipity.
It felt like that. It was like at every single stage, I was just like, well, I'm grateful for this. I'm grateful for this. What a wonderful opportunity this is. And then just got closer and closer and closer. I got my agent and I was like, oh, this feels like it is actually happening then. And it still doesn't really feel that real. Like, I quite often feel like I'm making it up. You know, when people are like, what's your job?
Feel like that.
Yeah. And I'm like... I guess I'm an author. Like, you know, like I write books and stuff. And people are like, well, do you or don't you? No. I'm like, no, I do. I guess that is true.
Yeah. But I still feel like that about stand-up.
Yeah.
People are like, what do you do? I'm like, oh, I show off for money.
It just kind of feels a bit like, it feels like, I don't know what it feels like.
Does it feel like accidentally bragging?
Yeah, it does feel like accidentally bragging. And I also think you get, and I don't know, you probably get this too. And then people will be like, oh yeah, I'm a writer too. You know, and everyone's got like a project on the go. And this and that. And then, I don't know, I'm like, I suppose I still feel like I'm talking about my hobby.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm interested, when you say, oh, it's felt like a dream job, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Hertfordshire, in mm-hmm. Bishop Stortford.
Yep, know it. Gigged there, sure.
Yeah, sure, why sure. not? You've gigged in Bishop Stortford?
Yeah, I've gigged in most places. No shows, no. Okay. Bishop Stortford's not a show, it's actually very pretty.
It's fine.
So I relate to that in a way of going, like, I didn't know anyone that was in the arts. Mm. Like, that was not something that my family did. It was nowhere near sort of touching distance for me.
Yeah.
If you were growing up and you were sort of a young person with sort of stories in their heads, was there anyone around you that was working in sort of a creative industry?
No.
Yeah.
So I didn't know anyone that worked in creative industries.
It feels impossible.
It feels absolutely impossible. Like, everyone knows that so much of working in this industry is who you know.
Oh, so much of it.
And
how much money you and how can bankroll you while you try and do it?
Exactly. And like my parents, my dad's a social worker, my mum's, she's a teacher and she works with kids and students who have got special needs. Mm-hmm. And those are my parents' friends did those kinds of jobs, mm-hmm. and those are the kind of jobs that I thought that you did.
Yeah, sure.
And it never occurred to me. I mean, I was incredibly lucky that I was so close to London, which meant that, you know, when I wanted to do like, you know, a week's internship at a magazine or this and that, yeah. I can commute, which mm-hmm. is just massive. Because if you're a young person who wants to work in the creative industries and you don't live near London, and you then, you know, I was lucky enough that I could afford the train in and out. Yeah. You don't get paid. Like, yeah, it's really complicated. So, yeah, it just felt like just not something that for me.
Right.
Yeah.
And were you, I know before we sort of turned on the mics, we were talking about consuming stuff like Sarah Walters as teenagers and Oranges are not the only fruit.
Yeah.
I always go to say orange.
Orange is the only fruit.
Because it's like a cross between.
Yeah.
It's cross between Orange is the New Black.
Yeah.
And I'm like, gay oranges?
Yeah,
like,
this is a gay orange one.
Yeah, yeah, no, lesbians with oranges.
Yeah.
You know that lesbian orange thing. Were you consuming sort of queer leaning? I was about to say the word bending sort of words. Yeah. Queer bending stuff. As like a young teen?
Yes, I was. Sarah Waters was massive for me.
Yeah, me too.
Tipping the Velvet. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Fingersmith.
Right.
Game changing.
Sure. Yep, absolutely.
Absolutely everything to me.
And then those, what's that guy's name? Andrew something, who put them all on the telly.
Oh,
he was like the creative, he was the guy that like put them into sort of scripted work. Andrew, and someone will know, they'll be shouting out at the podcast, that's fine.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. But did you watch all the TV ones as well? Yeah.
But I think the TV came out in like the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I watched it when I was, so I'm 34 now.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do any kind of maths, but I feel like I must have watched it when I was a young teenager.
Yeah.
Mind blowing to me.
Yes.
And I feel like then I didn't realise why it was so mind blowing. Mm-hmm. I would just think I was like, she's such an incredible storyteller.
Right, sure.
Like, and I guess I love historical fiction.
Yeah.
And like, that is true. And she's working on something right now and I'm so excited.
Yeah.
It's been years. But what else did I consume? I mean, I was actually talking about this the other day. I read Sugar Rush, which is not something that I would ever recommend to anybody now.
Has it aged badly?
It has, and the author is not somebody whose work I would ever recommend to anybody.
Right, okay, fine.
But I loved those books, and I loved that series.
I just remember who wrote it.
Yeah,
sure.
But that was so huge to me, and mm-hmm. Sugar Rush, and watching that on TV, and everyone was watching it,
yes.
and it didn't feel like it's a gay thing.
Yeah,
it
totally.
Felt like it was a teenage thing. So
yeah,
that
it was kind of like
cool.
Skins had that sort of slightly like edgy vibe, of, like they're smoking, they're drinking, there's some action.
Totally.
Yeah.
And that felt like something that I could almost like get away with watching, you know,
because
like everyone was watching it.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it was a queer love story, you know, it was someone who was totally obsessed with their school friend, which is like something a lot of young queer people can relate to.
Really heavily relate to.
Really, really heavily, deeply relate to. But everyone was watching it and it felt kind of like a safe one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big? Summarize with AI in a click.
Click, 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 click.
Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
So I remember reading, I think I probably read a handful of Sarah Waters novels before I'd come out, and certainly watched the shows before I came out, similar to you, before I really knew how much I related to them sort of quite passionately, in actually quite a deep and meaningful way. Were you aware of your sexuality sort of by sort of teenage years? Were you aware that you were? Did you feel sort of a thing that sort of comes up quite a lot on the podcast is sort of feeling slightly othered?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't think I was aware of my sexuality necessarily. Mm. I think I was aware of feeling very uncomfortable. I felt very uncomfortable with myself, and I couldn't necessarily put my finger on what that was about. And I guess, like, as a teenager, when you're feeling really, you know, there's hormones going on and everything's changing, your body's changing, you're really self-conscious anyway. And I felt like deeply like I was different to other people, and I didn't know what it was, and I couldn't articulate it, but I knew that I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't really want to put my finger on it. I just felt weird.
Yeah.
And like
that.
I definitely had loads and loads of crushes on people. I went to an all-girls school,
right?
And I had this really, really, do you know, yeah, I suppose so, but actually,
like, it only was because I didn't go, and they always sort of imagine it to be
like it was so fun.
Oh, cool.
Like,
that's good.
I always feel like when I remember school, like, and often, yeah, there is this idea of all girls schools, and I have it, like, for some reason still as well, about other all girls schools, but my school, I'm like, it was different, and like, people just, it was almost like we went out of our way to make ourselves not attractive to, like, we were so unbothered about being attractive to boys, certainly me and all my friends. Like, we had this disgusting, hideous uniform. I went to Hearts and Essex High School. Sure. So anyone who is aware of it will know it's a dark brown uniform. And when I went, you had to wear a kilt all the way down to your ankles. All the way down to your ankles. And so the only way to rebel with a skirt like that is you can't hike it up, so you have to make it lower. And so, like, we would wear these skirts, like, so low that people would be falling down the stairs. It would be, an actual hazard. And we'd wear, like, pyjamas underneath them. It was such a weird... It was a really weird thing. But when I think about it, I don't think about bitchy. I think about all of us just trying to, like, be the stupidest and make each other laugh the most.
Oh, that's really nice.
It was really nice. And I'm sure other people had different experiences. And maybe
I'm
just
really
friends with
jealous
a bunch
of that
clowns.
Experience.
But, like, yeah, it was... I like. Really I have nice. Really fond memories of school, even though I felt sort of always a little bit like I was going to be found out. But I didn't know that what I was feeling towards people was like a crush necessarily.
Yeah.
And I also didn't realise that other people weren't feeling like that.
Yes,
so I just
right.
kind of thought we are all having these kind of like intense friendships, and we were all so tactile and, like, you know... It just didn't occur to me that other people didn't feel like that, or that there was anything particular, or that other people were feeling like that about boys.
Right.
Didn't come into contact with any boys.
Because I read in an article you said that if you had, how much you loved, oh, what's it called? Angus Thongs and Perfect Jogging. How much you loved that book, but if there had been a queer character in it, it would have been utterly mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing. Yeah. It would have been... I honestly just don't think I had any kind of awareness of, like, queerness that related to me. Like, I knew that there were gay people, and I knew that there were lesbians. Lesbian was the worst thing that you could get called at my school, by the way.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally, yeah.
So I knew that they existed. I, you know, it was the thing that people got accused of.
Yes, right.
In not just, like, at school, but in, you know, popular culture. Yes. It was an accusation rather than an identity in my mind.
Oh, God, that's a great way of putting it, yeah.
I didn't associate with that. And so, like, I had an idea of what a lesbian was in my mind, and I was like, well, I'm not that. And
right.
I'm not sure that I'm part of that. And so it just never really occurred to me, even though I was consuming. I watched the whole of The L Word with my boyfriend when I was in sixth form.
Wow.
And while I was watching that, I was like, I'm fascinated by this. This is so intriguing to me.
Yes.
But I still was like, I don't know if that's got anything to do with me, though. Yeah. That took a while.
No, but I think that's... I'm a little bit older than you, but I think that's certainly common with girls of our generation, because I think... You know, similar to the fact, like, to the lesbians all being Victorian, I think there was, even now, to a degree, there's such a lack of gay women on television being like, I'm a lesbian.
Yeah.
This is what I do. Like, you know, not this is what I do, but
this is what I do.
Here's me in my garden. Here's me at home. Like, you know,
yeah,
home and lesbian. That's a magazine that I'm working on. But it would be, you know, it did feel like there was... For me, it felt incredibly isolating because it felt like there just can't be that many people that have normal lives because otherwise surely I would be aware of them.
100%. Like, where are the... Yeah, that was exactly it. There aren't people that have normal lives. And when I think about, like, lesbians that were present, like, you know, in my home in terms of what was on TV and what was on films, I think very occasionally it would be, like, Ellen DeGeneres.
Yeah, sure.
But she was so, like, desexualized, is so desexualized. Yeah.
American, far away.
And like, I don't know, a celebrity and such a, like, high profile, white, like, just this whole other, like, status of person. It's, you know, not a relatable person.
Yeah, it's hard to relate to someone that's talking to Reese Witherspoon about a party.
Exactly. Where they were like, both at. Maybe, like, that could be me one day.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, no, it was so lacking. And you're right, it's still lacking. It's still truly lacking. Like, I was talking to someone yesterday about why I'm so excited about The Queer Ultimatum.
Yes, right.
And that's so...
That's the new Netflix show that's
And it's such a depressing thing to be excited about because it is so... It's just trash. And these poor people. Like, I can't even... And I, like, every time I watch it, I'm like, oh, my brain cells are, like, just, like, dissolving. And it's, like, causing me unnecessary stress, my blood pressure and all of this. And I'm like, but, like, I deserve that. Like, it's so much fun. It's so, like...
Yeah.
Finally. I just watched I Kissed a Boy and I was obsessed. Like,
well, they're doing a female one.
Yeah, I Kissed a Girl.
I know.
Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Danny Minogue. Big fans of him.
Always looking out for us, the Minogues.
Do you know what they are? And God bless them.
They are.
Did you go to Sheffield for uni as well? Because I need your master's there.
Yeah, that's where I went.
And because I've... A few of my friends have said that, like, once they got to uni and there was, like, more sort of organisations or more different kinds of people that had come from, like, bigger cities that had, like, different ideas.
Yeah.
Was that... Yeah, was that sort of... what's the word I'm looking for? You're the writer. Was that...
Like, transformative.
Thank you. See, you're the writer. Is that... Yeah.
It took me a while to get there. But my best friend, Sid, is gay. And she had been out since she was 15. No, 13 even.
Wow.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
And I was at Sheffield with her, weirdly.
Great.
It was, like, a total coincidence. We'd both taken gap years. We didn't really know each other that well then. And we sort of... met him properly in Freshers Week and became, like, firm friends. And she was one of the first people I came out to, and she was so amazing. I was really lucky to have her. And she got it, you know.
Yeah, of course.
And then, you know, I had loads of queer friends who were all... You're right, like, it is about meeting people and seeing that there's a community out there that there's another option.
Yeah.
And I think it became so obvious to me, I guess, as I, like, got to know myself better outside of the context that I was used to. So, like, outside of my home and outside of my school and outside of my hometown. And I lived in Bishop Stortford from when I was, like, 3 years old. Like, that was the first time I'd ever left home and got to know myself sort of as an individual that it just became impossible to ignore. So I suppose before I came out to Sid, I came out to myself, I literally remember writing it in my diary, which is weird because I don't really write a diary. I think it was just, like, a random notebook, but I was like, I have to get this out.
Yes, like, literally. Totally, yeah.
And then everything felt... I mean, I guess you never really stop
coming that's true.
Out. It's constant, but, like, that was the first time I ever, like, vocalised it. And to myself and, like, very slowly to other people.
It's amazing, isn't it? Like, I feel like when you leave your home, I was very lucky to have a very sort of safe, supportive, lovely childhood. But there is sort of a license for you to slightly investigate yourself in a way that you can't at your parents' house.
Totally. Yeah.
The freedom to, like, you know, even sort of, like, going to bed when you want or talking as late as you want into the night without someone telling you off.
Yeah.
It does sort of mean that you have the space to, just to be, slightly more questioning about who you are.
Totally. Think for yourself.
Yeah.
And, like...
Similar with politics. And going, politics affects me.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was such a... I think for my undergraduate... It was, like, a real slow burn of figuring out who I was. And then my master's year, I really knew who I was and had, like, honestly, I don't remember a single thing that I learned during that year. I'm extremely...
You did American history.
I did American history. That's right. And no, honestly, ask me anything about American history. It's all in there.
Is it basically just Hamilton playing on loop in there?
It's just Hamilton.
Yeah. Great.
I learned about Hamilton.
Great, great.
And like, I'm so privileged to have done that. And like, honestly, I do not take that for granted at all. But what I remember about that year is like really like knowing who I was and like having the most fun with it for the first time like ever.
Yeah,
I was like, I was out to everyone, I was out to my parents, I was out to my friends, my family, everyone. Yeah. And I was like dating people and like getting my heart broken and like all of the stuff, you know. And that I am so like, when I think about that time, I'm just so grateful that I did it. I'm so grateful that I like listened and paid attention to who I was and just had loads of silly fun. Like, that's a thing that, you know, once you're out, and I know people have incredibly difficult experiences and not everything about coming out was easy, but like when that weight is lifted and you are who you are for the first time, the amount of fun that is and that you can have and the joy is just so massive. Like, I have such fond memories of that time as well as it being, you know, complicated.
Yeah, I think that there's, again, like, obviously it's different for different people and some people are not in safe scenarios where they can come out, but certainly for me, there was, like, I've come out and I've survived, so I sort of feel, like, indestructible. Like,
yeah,
like I can do whatever I want and I feel sort of powerful.
Totally. And I think that definitely comes as well from just not, you're not waiting to be found out anymore.
Yeah, right. Like, the amount of energy that goes into being in the closet is actually like exhausting.
It is exhausting. And you can just be like, well, that's it. That's who I am. And like, there's nothing else for you to find out. And so now I don't feel weird and uncomfortable anymore. Or like, you know, I'm being as honest as you are about who I am, and then you can take it or leave it.
Yeah,
and
totally.
It takes a long time to get to that place, but once you're there, it's such a relief.
It really is. It really is.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations of Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
This episode is brought to you by Etsy. Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Now until May 12th, get up to 30% off personalized jewelry, style, decor, and so many other items mom will love. And if you want her to know you put a ton of thought into her present, use Gift Mode. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting so you can easily find well-crafted, original, and affordable pieces from small shops. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about mom, and Gift Mode instantly gives you curated ideas based on hundreds of personas. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
Looking to invest? Start your journey by exploring exchange-traded funds with GlobalX ETFs. Exchange-traded funds, or ETFs for short, create baskets of stocks, bonds, and other assets that you can buy in a single trade. GlobalX specializes in ETFs that track emerging trends, like the rise of artificial intelligence, as well as strategies aimed to generate income potential. Visit GlobalXETFs.com to discover how you can get started.
And so, back to your books.
Yes.
So you entered that penguin competition. How was there, like, how much were you, I know that you don't write historical fiction, but how much do you think you were sort of inspired by people like Sarah Waters or Jeanette Winterford?
Yeah.
Son. Jeanette Winterson. leave that bit in, Emma. I want everyone to know how clever I am. but, like, was it like, okay, now I'm going to tell stories and they're going to be sort of from a queer perspective?
I just started writing,
right,
and then the story that I told was naturally from a queer perspective because those are my stories.
Yes, totally. Did you, like, beat it out as a book, or did you just...
No. And I still don't do that.
Do you not?
No, and I know people that do, and their writing process is so easy compared to mine. I write the fun bits first.
So
I'll have an idea in my head. I'll have characters.
Sure.
And then I kind of know what I want to happen to them. And then I'll be like, oh, it's going to be so much fun when they ... And then I'll write that bit. And then I'll write, oh my God, now they're going to go on a date. And now they're going to do this. And then I sort of smush it together and hope for the best.
Right. So it's like a jigsaw puzzle.
Like a jigsaw puzzle rather than me coming up with a plan. And I would love to be that person that comes up with a plan, but I simply am not.
Right.
So I never set out with an intention. I wasn't like, I'm going to write a queer book.
Mm.
But I knew that I wanted to write a friendship.
Yeah.
It's a very lovely romantic friendship between a lesbian and a gay man in my first novel.
Mm-hmm.
And they've both had their hearts broken and they're both sad little people.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had to move home because their, you know, living situations are ruined because of their partners, you know, breaking up with them. And sort of picking up the pieces to build each other up again.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't, loads of my closest friends are gay men.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't sure that I'd ever read like an uplifting novel about a gay man and a lesbian being friends.
Yeah, absolutely. Tom Allen and I talk about this a lot on our podcast when we're like, people sort of don't see us as a gang somehow, even though we are lumped together in all of the letters they put out for us, but you don't actually see that much of gay women and gay men together,
which is so interesting because in my experience, like, I mean, we are a gang. There's all of us
totally
together.
Agree.
We
yeah.
actually are the LGBT.
But
yeah, so I just knew that I wanted to tell that story, and then it kind of came out in my natural voice, which is like, it's light and it's like colloquial and it's fun. And I suppose like I was more inspired by like Angus Thongs and Full Frontal Slugging and like that kind of tone.
Yes.
Except gay people.
Yes.
I kind of just wrote what I wanted to read.
Yes, totally. Because that's the thing, because it doesn't feel like it's out there. As I said to you when you came in, I'm so enjoying Wild Things because it is so rare that I'm like, oh, I know these people.
Yeah.
Like, I know these guys.
I love hearing that.
Yeah.
That's all I, because that's all I ever, you know, you just want to relate to something.
Yes, totally. Like, I love doing it now, obviously. But I feel like had I had a copy of your book when I was 21, it would have actually felt sort of quite mind-blowing to be like, oh my God, okay, these are sort of friends in a book until I can find some gay friends.
Yeah. Oh my God. I it's just, that's all I want is for people to find friends in my books.
Yeah.
And I think I want people to know that it's okay. So I feel like when I was growing up and reading about like falling in love with someone, so like a woman falling in love with a woman, there's just pain and tragedy, and it's a horror show. And like,
when are they going to die?
Yeah, when are they going to die?
One of them.
Or like, one of them's going to get found out, and that's going to have horrible, terrible consequences for
off
one
she
or
goes
both.
To the asylum.
Yeah, exactly.
Off she goes to the wedding with the husband.
Yeah.
She's horrible.
Oh, they're both crying. There's like a hand pressed up against the windows. The train pulls away. It's just like,
I'd read that book.
Yeah. You're like, hang on, write that down. I am actually writing historical fiction now.
Are you?
God, sure. I wish.
No.
That's next.
The fifth book.
Yeah, the fifth book. I wanted to write books about having a crush on someone.
Yeah, right.
And how totally joyful that can be,
yes.
as well as rubbish.
Yes.
And like how much fun that is. And straight people always get to have crushes. They have a meet cute and then they fancy them. And then it's, they wallow in it and then they get with them at the end. And I was like, that's what I want.
Yeah,
like, that's
totally.
What I want. That's what I always wanted in my real life. And that's what I want in my books. And I just feel like it's a nice... It's just fun. I want people to escape into the books and be like, yeah, there's some joy here. I don't have to worry about what I'm going to bump up against in these books. I take care of my characters and you're not going to find anything for that.
And it's so nice. Like, it's so rare that we get a rom-com.
Mm.
Like, certainly in television and movies, like, my God, we'll watch anything, won't we? If there's, like, a gay Christmas film that comes out, it's like, I don't care how shit it is, I am watching that.
100%.
I am watching that twice. I'm feeling festive.
I was watching that twice. I'm watching that every year. I watched something called The New York Christmas Wedding. Have you watched that?
Sure, no, I'll watch it.
You must. I watch it out of season, even. It's unbelievable. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen, but I'm sort of evangelical about it.
Because it's gay.
Because gay.
Because gay. Yeah, because gay. And so was there any sort of... I mean, I'm talking about this from sort of a slightly different perspective of like trying to pitch for telly and different things like that. Did you ever have like a rub up against people being like, is there enough of an audience? You know, is this mainstream? Is it going to be something that can appeal to someone that's not gay?
Yes. not in so many words.
People aren't that frank.
People aren't that frank, weirdly enough.
Yeah.
And especially in publishing, people are very dancing around the point.
Sure.
Everyone is so nice to each other, and there's always 25 kisses at the end of each email, even if it's like a horrible rejection. Like, it's taken some getting used to. Yeah, love you, bye. We hate it. Oh my God, but we love you.
Some great ideas.
Some
just
great
not right
ideas.
Now.
We're obsessed. We're obsessed. It's a no, but we're obsessed. I went through the Penguin scheme.
Yep.
And at the end of it, I'd worked with a particular imprint, mm-hmm. and they...
And imprints, for people that don't know about publishing, because it's a new thing for me as well. Like, so there'll be like the big ones that we've heard of, like Penguin, Hachette,
yeah.
whatever.
And then there's
Pamela
smaller
Millen,
imprints
and then,
within them.
And they're like, and they sort of do like specific things.
Exactly that.
Right, okay.
So I'd worked with one imprint under the Penguin umbrella.
Sure.
They took it to an acquisitions meeting after I'd been working with an editor for a year. And they rejected it.
Mm, heartbreak.
Heartbreak. And
Rejection's
so tough. And they said it was because they didn't know where it would sit. And not knowing where things...
I've been told that about me as a
right?
person.
No!
It's about my stand-up, yeah. I've literally had someone say, we don't know where to put you.
Don't know where to put you. It's so infuriating. Frustrating.
It's so upsetting. It's
like...
It like harked back to like some... It like wakes up some like internalized homophobia that I thought I got rid of, where they're like, they were right all along.
Yeah, yeah.
No one likes you.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
It's because you're gay.
It's because you're
no
gay.
No one knows where you sit. so that I felt, and they never said in a million years that it was because it was a gay book, and I am not accusing them of rejecting it because it was a gay book, to be clear. But,
however, Penguin, babe.
However. Having said that, so that was my first big, I don't understand how I've worked on a rom-com with you that is gay and now you don't know where it would sit.
Because it's very obvious where a rom-com, like
it's
rom-coms,
rom-com.
Yeah, rom-coms must be, I guess, you know, like the big, one of the biggest banners in a bookshop.
Yeah.
You know, certainly when it gets to like holiday season.
Totally. It's like, a beach read.
Yeah.
They rejected it. And I was really, really fortunate after, I mean, I have an amazing agent who was basically like, like
she just mouthed fuck them so you know she's edgy
and was like, this is the best thing that could happen to you, Laura. And she was right, because I found an incredible publisher who has never once told me that they don't know where to put me.
Yeah.
And they've never had a queer rom-com writer before. And basically they have been so loyal to me, and they have stuck with me, and they have tried every single thing until we found the thing that works. So in terms of like finding an audience and how to position me and, you know, how to market the books and all of these things that I had never even considered when I was just writing the book,
right.
And now is all I think about.
Yeah.
And they, you know, I would say for anyone who's like doing anything queer creatively, if someone tells you they don't know where to put it or they don't know where it sits or whatever, that is simply them not having enough knowledge or educating themselves or working
totally,
hard enough.
Yeah.
Because there is a place for all like queer art, basically.
Yeah, totally. Especially if it's a book, like go to like Gaze the Word and it will encourage you to know that like other people have done it.
Exactly.
And if there's room for them, there's room for you.
Totally. And there's an audience for it. Like
totally.
I think that there's always been this like misconception that queer art or queer literature or queer anything is for queer people.
Mm.
And like, of course it is. Like, I'm delighted that so many queer people read my books, but straight people read it too,
or
enjoy it too. And like, it's so interesting. It's like, there's a real, people really underestimate an audience, or people underestimate, you know, a readership in general or whatever. Like, it's a real shame, because people just want stories, like great stories about people.
Yeah. And I think like, as the world is evolving, and people, you know, most good guys will have a handful of gay friends, you know, and but people have said to me before, like, oh, I was surprised by how straight the audience was tonight. And you sort of go, well, some, you know, sometimes I'll go to places where it's like, you know, like Birkenstocks at the door sort of thing. Like, it's heavily gay, heavily lesbian, which I love as well. But it's, you know, you're so, like, you know, the idea that, like, queer art is only for queer people, it's like, have you heard of Oscar Wilde?
Yeah.
You know, I think, like, you know, not that he was necessarily writing about queer people, but he was certainly coming from a queer perspective.
Yeah.
How did you get your voice out there? What was it that you, once the book was finished, and obviously you had your publisher, was it just about sort of just growing it slowly?
It was exactly that.
Yeah.
It was a slow burn.
Mm.
Like, I think I was learning and the publisher was learning, and we were all learning about exactly what to do with these stories.
Yeah.
And there was such an incredible reaction to the split. I was so, so grateful that people were picking up. I mean, it came out during lockdown, which was its own experience.
Yeah, was that a good thing or a bad thing? Like, are people reading more or not?
Well, it was a good thing in terms of, yeah, people were like supporting independent bookshops loads.
Sure, yeah.
And people were buying books online and to like read on Kindles and stuff But it was a bad thing in that all bookshops were closed.
Yeah.
And a lot of people had lost income.
Yeah.
And so
I wasn't saying whether the pandemic in general was good or bad. I know.
Oh no,
bad.
I mean for me, and I was just talking about people losing income in relation to buying
books.
My book.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh right. Yeah. Sure. Susie, I think the pandemic was bad. Oh, sorry.
You just personally, that's just my own feelings about it. But like, I don't want to speak for anyone else. And it's just about building an audience. But the people that read my books and buy my books and tell me how it's affected them are just the best.
Yeah.
Like, I have the best readers. I had someone message me on Instagram earlier and said, I hope you write these stories till you're old and grey. And I was like, God, me too.
Yeah.
I was like, I promise I'll try.
But that's great.
Yeah, it's really nice.
It must feel like you're in quite an exciting phase now.
Yeah, it does feel exciting. I feel like I've found my audience, which is like a really nice feeling, and like got into the groove of it.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it feels like, and it's really like exciting time in publishing, I think, for queer authors. Like,
yeah.
There's been a real boom, which is cool.
Yeah, definitely. And you're part of that.
Yeah, which is so great. And we can all lift each other up. Like, the, you know, the better a queer book does, you know, here or in the US or wherever, the better it is for all of us. It's really exciting.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think there's a common misconception that there can only be, and I don't know whether it's maybe a female thing of like, sometimes they would say like, you know, there's one space for a girl, and it sort of ends up sort of pitting the girls against each other. But actually, as soon as you read something that's by a woman and you love it, you go, I must read more things by women because I'm really connected to that. There's, you know, and
exactly,
it's so, you know, I've been reading more lately because my toddler is a very good sleeper now. She touches the wood. It's actually leather, but
that's
quite okay. I found some wood.
Oh, thank you.
And so now my wife and I will go to bed with our books at like 9:30.
So nice.
And read our books. And so like, I'm back into reading, and now I'm reading like ferociously. I'm like, I can't stop. I'm constantly buying books and I'm loving
the
peace of reading and sitting down. And so if you read one great queer book, you're going to be like, oh, you know, even if you're not queer, you'll be like, oh, well, that relates to me.
Exactly. Yeah, it's great.
And so before we go, first of all, I'm going to remind everyone of the books that they can get, because often it's a thing that we get often on this show. People will get in touch and say like, oh, I want to consume more queer stuff, or do you have any recommendations for books or you know, TV shows or films? So The Split, Tell Me Everything and Wild Things are your three books that are out at the moment, and you're working on a fourth?
Yes, I am.
That's exciting.
Yeah, really exciting.
When does it come out?
That'll come out sort of this time next year.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Marvellous. And we ask everyone the same question at the end of the show. And the version of you that I'm thinking of is that version of you that wrote down that you were gay before you could say it out loud, or indeed to anybody else. If you could reach out to her and, you know, sort of encourage her or like let her know that you were going to be writing the Angus Thongs and Perfect Snogging, but for the gay girls and boys and anyone in between, or someone that's like listening to this right now that's in a similar place where maybe they've only just admitted it to themselves and they might be on a journey before they manage to say it to anyone else. God, that was a really convoluted way of saying it today. Sorry, guys. But you know what I mean. What would you say?
I would say have loads of compassion for yourself and just be really kind. And it's a really slow process. And also and that doesn't matter. You don't owe it to anyone. It's all about you.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of going forward, don't demote yourself and how like valuable you are. Take everything at your own pace, and coming out and everything that comes with that is something that you can be really selfish about and put yourself first. And I would also say, like, you are going to find your people, like, and because of the community that I feel so lucky to be a part of, that means that you keep finding your people, which is the coolest thing ever.
That's so true.
And like, as soon as I came out, I found more people who I related to and was close to and understood me and I understood them, and I am still finding my people now. And that's my favorite thing in the world. And so, like, even if it feels really, really tough and you feel like you're the only person and no one's going to understand you and nothing makes sense and you feel really uncomfortable with yourself, that will get better. And you put yourself first and find your people, and then everything will become easy.
Yes. Oh, I loved that one. Smashed it. That was great. Thank you, Laura.
Thanks.
And that was the fantastic Laura Kay. I hope that you enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed chatting to her. And if you want to come and see me on tour, please do. I mentioned all the places in the intro to the show, but just go on my website, susieruffle.com, and it will have everything you need. There's stuff on my Instagram. I don't use Twitter. It's a hellscape. But you can find me on TikTok as well, if you're one of those people that watch stand-up on TikTok. I've got some stand-up on TikTok, sure. You can get in touch with me on the email. You can always get in touch with me. The email is hello@outwithsusieruffle.com. So get in touch. I hope that you have a great week. As I said, next week will be the final episode of this series. I'm going to have a little break over the summer. I'm going to have some time off with my family, which I am really looking forward to. And we're having our first family holiday, which I am very much looking forward to. So I'm going to have a bit of a break over July and August. And then I'll be back with you, I imagine, in September. September, October, there'll be a series before Christmas. Susie, you're just chit-chatting now to yourself in your room. Okay, I'm going to go. See you later, guys. Have a great week. Bye.